Welcome to Deep Dive. Henk Handlücken grew up in Finland, Brazil, Switzerland, and France. He ran the Berlin Arthouse Cinema Eiszeit from 1989 to 1993, and then studied at the German Film and Television Academy, DFFB, in Berlin. His graduation film, Paul is Dead, won the Grimme Prize 2001 and screened at several international festivals. His comedy Liegenlernen earned him the Förderpreis Deutscher Film for Best Screenplay at the Munich Film Festival 2003. He also collaborated, uncredited, on the screenplay for Goodbye Lenin and co-wrote Was nützt die Liebe in Gedanken. Henk's film Fenster zum Sommer premiered at the Hamburg Film Festival in 2011. He has been working as a writer and director on the acclaimed series Babylon Berlin, which is about to go into its fifth and final season since the beginning. Vaterland, Fatherland, for which he co-wrote the script, premiered in competition at the Cannes Film Festival in 2026. We talked to Henk via video call for this interview. Henk Handlücken, welcome to Deep Dive.
Hello. Thank you very much for having me.
Thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us today. Vaterland, Fatherland, the feature film you co-wrote, premiered in competition at this year's Cannes Film Festival last week, actually. Congratulations. Great reviews. Before we get to the film, we'll start off with a few questions about you. Tell us a bit about your journey to becoming a writer and director.
Well, I think it started pretty early. I had one very important experience when I was 14 or 15. At that time, I was living in Paris with my parents for a couple of years. And there was a theater called Le Théâtre des Amandiers in Nanterre. At that time, it was run by Patrice Chéreau, who later became a very known film director. He was a very known theater director. And he invited a German filmmaker, Edgar Reitz. Mm. And there was one weekend where you could actually see the whole First Heimat, which is a 16-piece film. Today, you would call it a series, but Edgar Reitz always saw it as one long feature film of 16 hours. And I was there with a school friend of mine. And after these 2 days, was separated in 2 times 8 hours, yeah. I came out of the theater and I said to my friend, listen, I don't know what I saw there or how do they do this, but this is what I want to do with my life. But I didn't have any clue about filmmaking or storytelling or whatever, but that was the very beginning of it all.
How do you choose your stories or commit to a project? What is your process there?
It's very different, you know, from project to project. Usually it somehow has to resonate with my personal life, yeah. Which doesn't mean that it has to be intimate or private or something like that, but it has to somehow resonate that I do have the feeling that I'm the one who could tell this story and better than somebody else. And that excludes lots of stories, even genres where I think I'm not the right one. I think that's the basis of the whole thing.
Mm-hmm. A political film is definitely not an easy genre. Especially if it's based on real people, real events. It can sometimes be hard to find the right tone or where and on whom to put the focus of the story. How was that process for you and your co-writer on Vaterland to find that balance and where to put the focus?
Well, you're absolutely right. If you deal with real people that actually lived their lives and have existed, you have a different kind of responsibility. It was always clear that we are responsible for, of course, you're always responsible for what you're telling, but especially if you use the lives of people that have actually lived. So in one way, it was clear to us that we had to be accurate. Mm-hmm. But on the other hand, we knew that we wanted to take liberties because we didn't want to shoot a biopic.
Yeah.
Meaning this happened and then that happened and then that happened. And it's all exactly how it actually happened. Because that is mostly very boring. If you make a fiction film, it's not, well, what we think, it's not the right way to proceed. Actually tell the audience what you have read and how accurate you are, you know, about all the facts and the details. But of course, you have to be very accurate about details, especially when you're, you know, make a historical film or a period piece. But in this case, we thought, well, it all started. Is your question also how did the whole thing start?
Yeah, very, very interested to hear that.
So the whole thing started with a novel that Pavel came across about the writer Thomas Mann,
yeah,
from Irish writer Colm Tóibín.
Mm, mm-hmm.
But in his work, Tóibín describes the whole life of Thomas Mann. So starting with his birth and ending with his death. We were looking at it, and the first time when Pavel asked me to read the novel, I had not quite finished it. There were two chapters left, and I called him and I said, listen, I'm reading this, but I really don't see a film because there's nothing more static than Thomas Mann, you know? I mean, he's so, you know, the country of moving.
Yeah.
So I said, well, listen, I'm gonna finish it, but I don't really see something here. And then I had the penultimate chapter, which was about his journey in 1949 when he came back to Germany. I immediately thought this could be something. This could be a road movie. And I called him up and he said, well, I'm just finishing it right now and I have the same idea. So we were agreeing on just taking a very small part out of the life of Thomas Mann. And with that, we moved away from Tóibín's work because very early on, we thought that Katya, who was Thomas Mann's wife, who actually accompanied him in this journey,
mm-hmm,
it was not Erika who was with him. We thought they are such a symbiotic couple, Thomas and Katya, that it's not so interesting, you know? It's like one voice speaking there. So where's the conflict? And so very early on, we thought, well, maybe we'll change that. Maybe because we were very interested in the father-daughter relationship.
Mm-hmm.
And Erika Mann is a very interesting, you know, figure in history anyways. So we thought maybe we could do that. Because in real life, she actually drove him around, but only 6 years later when he didn't get the Goethe Prize, but the Schiller Prize, which we thought, well, maybe after so many years, it could be kind of the same thing. So this was something that we changed. And come back to your question, it was also a matter of perspective. By leaving the authenticity, we also found the perspective. I mean, it's mm-hmm, it's more a Erika story than a Thomas story, I think.
I've already touched on this. The film covers a lot of ground. You have the father-daughter story. You have the historical post-war dimension, the lingering stench and threat of Nazism. Were there any particular scenes and discussions where you and Pavel were sort of trying to figure out where to put the focus? Was it a smooth road?
No. I mean, there is a book by the driver who actually drove this fantastic black car,
yeah,
an old Buick Roadmaster, which is like a rolling coffin in a
mm-hmm
way. He was a wealthy Swiss guy who actually owned this car, and he was driving Thomas around in 1949. And he actually wrote a book about this journey, which is very unknown. I mean, it's you can hardly find it, but we found it. And this was like a compass, you know, because every little single stop they actually made during this journey was described there, but in a very unliteral way, like in a journal. Yeah, it's like,
yeah,
we went from here to there and this happened, which is great, you know, for us, was great for us. The guy's called George Mochan. So we knew that the journey was much longer. So they came from Switzerland to Frankfurt, and then they passed also, they went down again to Nürnberg and Munich, or other way, Munich and Nürnberg.
Mm-hmm.
In Munich, they actually found the ruins of their old villa.
Mm.
And this was all very tempting, and we had all these scenes in there. So one of the first drafts was actually a very accurate depiction of this journey with all these. There was Bayreuth in there, Nuremberg and Munich,
mm-hmm,
and then Weimar. So it was a longer script. But especially Pavel's gift is to throw things out, you know, to actually concentrate them more and more and more and more and more, which is in a way his genius, because
mm-hmm
he always found something that we could even throw out or lay on top of each other, make different layers. So the whole thing gets so, yeah, rich in a way in subtext as the film is now, and it's a very short film. It's only about 80 minutes.
Oh wow, very short in modern times.
Yes, and everybody's happy that the film is so short. The moviegoers and and everybody else.
Can you tell us your favorite scene? Obviously, without giving away too much, because the film isn't out in theaters yet. And maybe give our listeners a little bit of behind-the-scenes background or why it's your favorite scene.
I think there are two scenes that actually stick out. But in a film that is so minimalistic as Fatherland, usually I can't remember when I go to the movies. I'm not the type of spectator who actually comes out and remembers all the scenes. My mind works more like, how was the atmosphere? How was the emotion? I even think it's hard sometimes to tell the story, to retell the story when I come out, because that's not so important to me. Mm-hmm. In this case, I do remember each and every scene because it's so simple in a way. So they come from here and they go there. But there's one special scene, which is also actually the opening of the scene, mm-hmm. which is a phone call between Erika, who is in Los Angeles and you don't see her, and her brother Klaus, who is in a hotel in Cannes. And he's very desperate. And Pavel, and this was a scene that was always the opening, or not always, but it was the opening very early on. Actually, the only time that you really see Klaus Mann.
Yeah.
And this monologue, played by August Diehl, Pavel chose to actually leave it in one single take.
Wow.
Without cutting.
Yeah.
And it's a 5.5 minute monologue, or it's a dialogue because he's on the phone, but, mm-hmm. but you only see him. This is very, very, very strong. And I was really absolutely overwhelmed when I saw this, because when we wrote it, you know, there are some three close-ups in the very beginning, but apart from that, it's just this one take. And the scene is very long. It's a six and a half page long scene. And I always thought, of course, he will, you know, have different setups and different shots and cut it. But no, he left it in just one take. And August Diehl, when I met him in Cannes now, also told me that the whole team was sensing that in a way this was the one take,
yeah.
where the whole scene is actually told. And also the cinematographer Łukasz Żal also told me that they had more setups, but after they experienced this one performance by August, Pavel also decided, well, we're not gonna shoot any more material today, we're all going home.
Yeah.
He didn't say, okay, let's have more setups and then I decide in the editing room.
Yeah.
No, he said, well, this is it. And so this is a very, very strong scene, and you somehow sense that there's some magic in there. Mm-hmm. So that's the one scene. And also the last scene of the film, which I can't tell you which it is, but that's also an outstanding, very emotional scene.
You're a writer, but you're also a director. Is there ever a conflict between the writer you and the director you? I mean, does that bleed into each other, or are you pretty good at keeping those separate?
Usually I do direct my own scripts.
Mm-hmm.
Here it was special, but usually I do direct my own scripts. Or as you know, I've been working for the last 12 years, I've been working on Babylon Berlin with Tom Tykwer and Achim von Borries, which is a crazy collaboration because we still like each other very much after such a long time. And we do not divide directing there, by the way. We write everything together, but when we direct, it's just one guy on the set and not three, because that would, you know, complete chaos. Usually it doesn't happen at the same time. So usually, because writing takes much longer time and much less money, usually I spend most of my lifetime writing and only very few parts directing, because it's so expensive and it's so demanding. And so, no, there's a good balance.
Okay. You mentioned Babylon Berlin, 12 years, and obviously making a feature film also takes up quite a long time. Are you good at saying goodbye to characters and stories, or is that hard for you to then sort of let them go out into the world?
Well, it's very different. I mean, of course, it's such a very long-running series like Babylon. We have five seasons. We are just ending the last and final season. Just right now, we are just mixing, and then that will be it.
Wow!
After such a long time. So that's completely different to let these characters go after 48 episodes. And time-wise, that would be 24 feature films.
Wow.
Can you imagine 24 feature films in 12 years? That's pretty hard. But on the other hand, it's okay now. We always wanted to only tell from 1929 to 1933. And after that, the Nazis took over. And that's a different story then. So that's okay to let them go. But in a case like Fatherland, it was a very quick work. Mm-hmm. We were just writing for around a year. I mean, not every day, but it took like the process from the very first draft to the shooting script. It was around a year, which is pretty fast, very fast.
Yeah.
Of course, in the hands of a master like Pavel, it was not a problem at all to let that go. And I'm not planning another Thomas Mann film. So that's okay. It always depends on the project. But usually it's not hard to let things go because when you made a film, you said everything on this topic and then it's said and then it can go out into the world.
Yeah. For the end, I have a few rapid fire questions for you. Is there a particular story that you would still like to tackle? And can you tell us about it? I guess this is the most important part of the question.
Well, of course, there are, but as long as it's not written, it's not there.
Okay.
As you say in German, ungelegte Eier.
What would you say is the biggest misconception about the work of a writer from someone outside of the film industry that you've come across?
Well, the work of a writer is always hard to understand for everybody else because it's work. And most people think of it as a hobby that you do when you have time. But this is not it. I mean, you sit there every day and as everybody else, you go to work and you write. And it's not about, well, sometimes I have some spare time and then I write. No. That's not it. You have to write every day.
Yeah. You've been at this for some time. Has the work changed over the course of the years? And that can be an external change or internal one, as in how you approach the work.
I think the work is changing right now extremely because of the work of AI. I'm not using it so far. I mean, of course, I'm using it because I do research. So that's AI as well. But I write everything myself. But I don't know. I mean, things will change. I mean, for my future projects, I don't have any plans to actually use AI, more and more and more, but I don't know. I mean, I don't know. It also depends on AI and the way actually the whole industry changes. Maybe you will get only, 3 weeks for a script. So how can you do that if you're not using it? But I don't know. That's the future.
You've mentioned that you're currently in post-production for the last season of Babylon Berlin. Can you share which project is going to be next?
Well, I can tell you that I'm working on a feature film.
Okay.
My last feature film is a very long time ago. I mean, of course, Fatherland, but I have not directed it. So the last feature film was in 2011. Can you imagine?
Oh, wow.
A summer window. So after all these years in writing and directing series, I will go back to a feature film.
Okay. Thank you so much for sitting down with us today, Henk. It was a pleasure.
Thank you very much, Christina.
Deep Dive Genre is produced by German Films, the National Information and Advisory Center for the Promotion of German Films Worldwide. To find out more about our guests, check out the links in our show notes. To stay up to date with our episodes, subscribe wherever you find your podcasts.